Good afternoon, everyone. It is 2 p.m. and we're located, we're in the Josephine County Board of County Commissioners Conference Room. And we're here for the Josephine County 4-H Extension Service District Budget Committee meeting. Call the meeting to order and we'll receive updates. I think right now, Mr. Punches, if you will do the introductions around the table so we have it on tape.
Okay.
Commissioners present are Simon Hare, Commissioner Morgan, Commissioner DeYoung.
Okay. John Punches, Budget Officer for the district.
Sam Engel, member of the Budget Committee for the district.
And Peter Pernarelli, also a member of the Budget Committee.
Okay. Item number two is receive updates on extension programs and services in Josephine County.
So our faculty and staff are here today, and they prepared a presentation for you. And this is kind of our annual update on what's been going on with the extension service here in Josephine County over the last calendar year or portion there of. And so I think Sue is going to kick that off. Is it loaded up?
It is, but I think we're waiting on the advance clicker. And one of the things, did we talk about, I'm sorry I missed the last meeting. I was doing something. But in years past, it's we've gone and done this at the Ambassador so it can be videoed and then archived online. Did the district find that beneficial, or was there no response at all, no reference to it on your guys' webpage or publication?
I know we were in here last year, but I think afterwards we talked about that it would be beneficial for all the presentations to be recorded.
We've
to be shared.
It done last, not last year, the year before, I think it was.
Yeah, a couple of years.
It was a couple of years.
Yeah. The years we've done it for a couple of
just
years.
Just go back and forth.
Yeah.
I don't want to suggest something that isn't beneficial for the future. It's obvious we're going to do it right here, but if I with everything that's on YouTube and everything else, mm-hmm. people are liking video. All Facebook is, if you don't have a video, nobody cares what you post. It might, I don't know if it's advantageous in the future that we try to do that. Or have somebody in here that just captures, you know, Sue's going to say something important, I'm sure, and everybody else, their little 30-second bit, right, of course.
Cheryl's like, I'm not chopped liver.
I'm just looking at ways to highlight what it is that you guys
do. We will be happy to next year do it.
You're in the right room.
You guys just let us know where you want it. So,
who is the third person on the place side for the committee?
Come on up. Let's set the table right.
Great.
Sorry. So we are joined by Cindy Andrews.
Yes.
Great. Welcome. Our committee is complete. So, as soon as we get the signal that we're ready, we will go ahead and start the presentation.
Time here, Al. This is our annual 4-H report from the state, which just was published.
Can I close this door?
No, it technically needs to stay open.
Okay.
Do you have a copy of this? Everything?
Sorry about
I can
the
get a copy.
Sound.
Oh, no, no,
that marble really sure. resonates, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Nice
yep.
to see you come on here.
Thanks.
Okay. So I wore my green tie in honor of 4-H today.
Okay.
Forward.
Go.
Or OSU.
Forward. All right.
U of O.
OSU.
Was it OSU? He was orange and black.
That's all I'm saying is that, you know, supporting, is it OSU or is it 4-H? Which do you support? So, you know.
Okay.
As far as the service district, the 4-H comes first. And then
that's
it's
right.
Extension, you know, but anyway. So this is our annual kind of review of what we've done over the last year. For my part, I kind of end at the end of the calendar year. So this is kind of for me a 2007 version. So I kind of wanted to review, or at least show you guys, this is the vision that we work with at the state level. All youth will experience positive, thriving trajectory development, leads to an adulthood marked by health and well-being, economic stability, social success, and civic engagement. That's our goal for all youth in the state. And this is the mission of our program. And so all of our programs are designed to follow the things that we've actually stated here. That is our purpose and what we're supposed to be when we do good work, and high intense learning for the kids. So 4-H over the past few years is based along these four elements, which is belonging, mastery, independence, and generosity. And as I teach my volunteers when they come on, unless you reach each of those kind of goals, you really can't develop into the next one. So before you can move on to become a master at anything, you need to be have that sense of belonging and feel complete, safe, and have that environment where you can learn. And so then you can go on and start learning mastery things. Once you've mastered something, you have that sense of, gee, I can actually maybe make a difference because I do know something now, which would move them into that independence realm. So now I can start making decisions, voting on things, and maybe helping influence other people. When I get to that sense, then it's like, now I have something I can really give. And that moves them into the stage of generosity. So for belonging, our largest program is obviously our club program, which runs all year long. So in 2017, we had 387 youth enrolled, 91 volunteers, and 20 clubs in the county. We did some other special interest things, our shooting sports. 11 of our youth in our county qualified to go to the state for the state tournament and possibly then qualify to go on to nationals.
Some were first years, too, weren't they? That qualified to go.
Absolutely.
That was awesome.
Yeah, they're great. And we did have one youth last year who qualified to go to nationals in two different disciplines, both archery and rifle. He placed first in the state in archery. And so he had to choose one, so he's choosing archery, and they're going at the end of June. To Grand Island, Nebraska. We did a day camp, which had eight youth, most of which were brand new to 4-H, had never heard of it before, came in from relatives and word of mouth. We did a lot of focus on solar energy last year because of the eclipse, which happened in August. So when we partnered with SFI, and Amy, who's my EPA, went and did some classes with them for a resident camp, which was a week long, and it was out at SFI. And then we also did a lot of day events at like Boys and Girls Club and the YMCA and things during the summertime, where she would do a different event, Smile Club, Kids Zone, and YMCA, and brought science activities. Again, a lot of it was focused around solar energy, what was going to happen, and we did give out a lot of different the solar glasses so to protect the kids' eyes. We also did a every day at the fair. So when the kids came in, they had an activity they needed to do, and then they were given glasses and told, and it was kind of cool because we had a lot of adults stop and ask questions too.
SFI?
Siskiyou Field Institute.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, out in Selma.
Can I ask a favor?
Sure.
Would you be willing to stand over here so he can see?
No, I'm fine. I can hear her plenty well.
You can't? Okay.
She resonates very well in my...
okay. I just want to make sure, because as we're looking there, I want to make sure that...
Yeah, I have this lower register voice.
I'm going to contract her to teach speaking classes as soon as we're down here.
Awesome.
No, you're fine.
Okay.
And so we had planned in the fall to start this Junior Master Gardener class out of Highland, but things kind of got messed around with other faculty that we were working with, and so we worked on it and actually started it in January. So I'll have more of it in this next year report. But we're on our second session out there, which is an after-school program of a Junior Master Gardener program, and it's pretty cool. We've only had two sessions and grown in numbers from one to two. And we actually did a little display for the Grants Pass School District Board asked us to come and do a presentation. And we got all done, and they go, can we do this in all our schools? And it's like, yeah, but you guys got to get us volunteers. I mean, there's only a couple of us staff. If we don't have volunteers, we just can't make it happen. So,
have you got a response to that?
No.
Okay.
Just thinking about it, obviously. Yeah, I mean, it was just a few weeks back, so it's not like the end of the school year and so on. So, anyway, these are the 33 project areas last year that we actually did work in and taught kids in. So it's broken down in those specific things. Again, these breakdowns come from the state office, and so that's how they break those things down under different specific things. And again, those are things that the kids will put in fair displays and then can qualify to take them on up to state fair. So these are 1,665 reported workshop hours. These are not man hours, but just hours. And there could be multiple people doing the trainings at those times in those particular different areas. Beef really came up this last year. We got a group that are really interested in raising good quality steers in this county. And so that was one of the biggest areas of growth. Shooting sports, for some reason, this last year kind of declined. And that used to be kind of our biggest one other than swine.
Do you guys partner with the All Sports Park?
We go out to the shooting
sports
park.
That's where you
go.
But
yes.
Do they help out? They've got a club.
No, they kind of have their own club. We go out and have our own trainings and everything. We do go sometimes and help them when they put on events. So that's part of our community give back through that program. Mm-hmm. And also, they do some fundraising things out there as well. So, but yes, they're very supportive of us. We actually bring adults in once a year in March and do a train the trainers. So we're training the adults to train the kids.
Yeah.
And they come all over from all over the state for that.
That's great.
Yeah.
What's the difference between electricity and solar energy?
Well, solar energy was a specific thing we were looking at. And again, it had to do more with the eclipse, the sun, and so on. Electricity is, you know, basically electricity, electronics, circuits, AC, DC, so okay. on. How do you
basic
build them? How do you put them together?
Okay.
Yeah, the beginnings of things.
Ohm's law.
Yeah. So moving on to the independence part, this is where they start practicing those skills as club officers and in their business meetings. So they start taking control of their clubs, you know, deciding what are we going to do for fundraisers, what are we going to do for community service, holding those business meetings. And again, just backing up a little bit, I think I had time in there. So business meetings, also I noticed hour-wise, came up quite a bit this last month. One of our clubs was not having it. Some of the real young kids who are training to be junior leaders came to me and said, can we do that as a junior leader project? I said, you bet you can. And they talked their project leaders into having at least one business meeting every month. So, and they're starting to run those. They get to choose, obviously, what is of interest to them for their projects and determine what to exhibit at county fair. So last year we had 1,835 county fair exhibits. 101 actually went on to state fair.
That's incredible.
And they get to choose. Again, a lot of them will qualify, but then they have to come in sometimes and choose between this and that to be able to go because there's a quota that we can send because of the size of our program. We also have opportunities to choose other activities. I had 9 kids in my youth council, which is our leadership for the county for the program. I took 2 kids to Youth Voices in Action. That is a state function where they learn citizenship. We go to the Capitol. They learn about bills, how to pass them. They work with the different departments at the state level, like Health and Human Services, Education, Transportation, and they're given questions by those departments to go and research and come back with a youth perspective on them. And then they actually do a presentation to the department heads the very last day as to what they've come up with.
You know what's really interesting about that? I participated in, I think I did 4-H Youth Council, but I did the Washington Leadership Conference through FFA, and if there was a leadership opportunity, I did it. They'll tell you all about how to pass a bill.
Yep.
They don't tell you anything about what happens locally. Even Oregon Beaver Boys State, it's all about governor and blah, blah, blah. And nothing what happens at our level. It's really interesting how there's this disconnect.
Benton County has a really good program that I would like to bring here.
Yeah.
Because I've gone up and watched it for their county government.
Yeah.
And they get to, commissioner comes and talks to them, the sheriff comes and talks to them.
Sure.
Take a tour of the jail, take a tour of the 911 center. And they get to learn how all of that happens.
We should do more of that.
And I would love to do that.
Would that be cool?
That would.
Yeah.
And it's for middle schoolers. So.
Well, and I think it would really help, you know, they talk to their parents, and then it just kind of gets out with this is what the county's doing. A lot of people don't even know who their county commissioners are.
Yeah.
You know, or they refer to us as city councilors and stuff like that. They don't know the difference locally.
Well, I think there's a kids don't realize when you open the water faucet where it comes from. They just think it comes out of the faucet. So tours of the water plant, sewage treatment plant, what happens when you flush the toilet? Where's it go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that things in the public works line of work, and those are good trades, really good trades.
Exactly.
And I don't know whether we kind of skip over that and say, well, you need to be the governor. How do you get to be the governor when really you should start out at maybe city council or county commissioner or something of that sort?
Yeah.
Or many number of the boards that we have in our county.
And the nuts and bolts. I mean, the nuts and bolts of where does the water come from? What happens to the garbage that I put it in the can? I don't care where it goes from here. And I think if you had a little bit more education along that lines, what happens and what do those people do with it? You might have a little bit different.
Or the irrigation districts or, you know. But, I mean, some of these kids are learning it hands-on if they're helping. All right, you got
anything we can do to help facilitate those connections?
Love to
try to do that.
Summer conference, we had a couple of kids go. Again, I got more signed up. That's the end of the month in June where they get to go up for 4 days of food, fun, and learning about campus and what it's like to live up there. Countywide and statewide clinics all the time going on. They're invited to take part in. We have always the 4-H National Congress and conference. One is 1,300 kids get together in Atlanta, Georgia. They're all 4-H'ers from all over the United States and Guam and Puerto Rico and everything, and they have 4 days of conference. The other one is in Washington, D.C., and it is the bigger version of what we do for Youth Voices in Action, only they do it at the Washington, D.C. level. And that's how we got ours, is they brought it back to our state and did it at the state level. So, and obviously, interstate, one of the principals emailed me the other day and said they're going to bring back, or someone's really talking, would love to do rural and urban exchanges. And there is one already going on. It's between Portland and Eastern Oregon. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe to spread that around the state would be cool, too. Exchange those cultures between the people that live on the farms and the people that are living in the city and what's it like.
Do we send anybody to the National Congress? Or
we have not the last couple of years. And the thing with National Congress is it is a recognition, so that they actually have to apply and interview for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a bit more involved. So, generosity. I started looking at this going, man, those weren't very many hours. And then I realized two-thirds of the clubs never turned in their paperwork. So, this year I really have to get on them because this is way down compared to what we normally do. There's usually a lot more involved in foods for the needy, visiting the elderly. Kids take their rabbits and so on and visit with those kinds of things. Again, the biggest one here ended up being fairgrounds cleanup because of all the kids that turned out there. And then all the different programs that we do around Boatnik coming up this weekend. We have a lot of clubs involved in different areas of Boatnik, helping out do stuff and making sure that happens. These are the life skills the kids learn along the way without even knowing it, just because of the way we work the program, the way we design it, the things we have them think about, work on, plan, and be active in. And those, they've tagged them all to the different parts of the, you know, the head, heart, hands, and health of our pledge.
Is our county health department involved at all in, would we engage with you on the health side of that?
Or well, we have our colleagues with Cheryl and stuff like that. We've helped out with the Kids Dash and been over there kind of working that program. We have our own curriculum which comes in, but some of her EPs have also, we've been talking about some of the things we can do jointly, like there's an Iron Chef contest, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. That got started again in another county. So, yeah, trying to work those programs together. Career exploration, obviously, you know, these one-on-ones they have with all their volunteers, they learn about many, many of these careers. They take tours of different places. Once a year, our horse kids go out to one of the vet clinics and do a clinic out there and learn all about, you know, what's involved there. So they're exposed to many of these different careers.
Do any of the 4-H groups ever do any volunteerism at our animal shelter?
Yeah, some of the kids do individually. And again, those I don't get as reports because it's just within their records. And unless they turn their records in at the end of the year, I don't even see them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are. and then these were just quotes from two young ladies who had turned in scholarship applications and kind of the impact that they've had on 4-H, that 4-H has had on them, I should say. Mm-hmm. Because obviously that is one of the things we do want to capture. And so I will show you this, which is a new model that we're working with. Coming up, one of our state specialists has been looking at the way we're trying to capture how does 4-H impact kids. And the old model that we had, they weren't coming up with really good data, and they couldn't really figure out how to ask the right questions. And so she's been working for the last couple of years and has kind of worked out this model now. And last year she did her first pilot run of evaluations for it. And it seems like we're going to be able to get some good data. So I'm thinking next fall, or maybe the fall after that, we're actually going to be able to have an evaluation that we can do of all the kids in the program and see for sure that if we do this, which is the circle stuff on the left side, the volunteers, the materials, the program, and so on, that if we get these kids on this thriving trajectory in these six specific areas, that we will have these developmental outcomes. So I just wanted to show you that's coming up, and we're all kind of learning about it. We're going to start teaching our volunteers, you know, how to plan their program so that it fits in with this model and keep those kids on that thriving trajectory. So, thank you guys. Greatly appreciate all that you do, and thank you for the funding for our program.
Do you have any questions? You've been firing questions all along.
That's good. Yes.
Anything popped up while you're thinking?
So who's next on our list there?
Just volunteer opportunities.
So I think what I would want to say is that I would like the board to be a conduit to resources that you'd like. I mean, as the 4-H Extension Board, I think we're pretty passionate about it. I'd like to see ways that, you know, if you want to get to somebody, the sheriff or anybody else for those kinds of situations, public health, animal control, whatever it is, that we could be that resource for you to just kind of encourage that connection to the
Excellent.
To the youth. There's a lot of the leadership things, you know, having maybe an invitation from you guys to the board,
mm-hmm.
delegate somebody to come in and speak to them about what it's like. And she's really good with kids, much better than I am.
Congratulations, you've been nominated.
You've been voluntold.
I like us. Okay. I'll second that.
My
all in favor.
Colleagues for the last 8 years have been people. I don't have kids. I don't know that I relate really well. I'd like to. It's
not there yet.
They're not voters. So really, I'm just kidding. It's just a joke. She's really good at it.
But 40 years from now,
yeah, we'll be voters. Right? Yeah.
It's just we'll something I think we could do that doesn't take a lot of money. It just takes a little bit of energy and time.
I think you're right. And I enjoyed particularly this last year's fair, talking with kids, you know, in line of like, all right, what brings you out? Ah, we're 4-H. We're, you know, how long have you been in? First year. I heard over and over and over again. So something was going right that you're recruiting new people last year, and I hope that continues. But I was very impressed with the amount of kids that were around that were there as first years, and and they were willing to talk to a stranger, so that was even better. So
yeah, that's always exciting when they take that step out and you're going, yes, because they come to that first meeting and they'll stand back in the corner and not say anything, and you're like, oh,
that's
okay,
huge.
Let's go.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, because some of them, it's like, we could just
the next 40 years, they won't stop talking.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sarah Rumpel, and I'm the new Extension faculty here in Josephine County. I'm in the horticulture department, so I'm covering home and community hort, as well as some small farms horticulture, which involves coordinating the Master Gardener program. So Karen Pleasant, the Master Gardener coordinator, retired in December. I started April 1 at a 0.7 appointment, so I'm not full-time with this duty, but it's really great to be here. I moved down here from Douglas County, where I've been with OSU Extension for the past 3 years.
Welcome.
So the information that I have for you is gleaned from Karen's reporting on activities with the Master Gardener Program in 2017. But I thought it would be good to just review the mission of the Master Gardener Program and talk about some of the flagship programs that the Master Gardener Program at the state level focuses on. So this is the mission of the Master Gardener Program. And the goal is really to provide training for volunteers in home and community horticulture and provide them with the skills so that they can assist Extension with doing education and outreach to the community. The two flagship programs for the Master Gardener Program are sustainable gardening and local and backyard food production. So we really try to bring our volunteer activities and the educational programming that we do kind of back to these two flagship programs to make sure that those activities tie into those two areas. The volunteers do a wide array of activities.
I think you've been using this picture for
yes.
a couple of
so
years.
Yes.
Neither one of those two people is involved in Master Gardener.
That's Kia McCurry.
It is Kia. Yes.
She looked exactly like that.
Did you use her?
Yeah.
Zip picture.
She's really intense in that photo. It's
yeah.
You're going to like this apple.
You're going to like this apple.
That was the year she was president of Master Gardeners. It's a few years ago.
Good,
so next year we'll hopefully have some different pictures.
That's okay, but it's just like, it makes an impression.
Sarah will update it for next year.
Send that out for a caption contest. What do they say?
So one of the key services that our volunteers provide is staffing the plant clinic. So they do this in the office. So we have office hours 4 days a week where volunteers are available to answer walk-in visits, phone calls, emails from the public about home gardening related questions. They also staff plant clinics at the growers market, another old picture. And
just another
at
happy
different
day.
Events in the community, like at the fair and different garden clubs, those sorts of things. So in 2017, approximately 3,500 hours were volunteered in the plant clinic, and over 1,500 inquiries from the general public were answered by volunteers.
And half of those hours were from one person.
Yeah, well, we have a very dedicated volunteer who runs the plant clinic and does the volunteer training
That's
in the
phenomenal.
Clinic. And yeah, it's pretty amazing. So, volunteers as well as faculty also do community education related to gardening. And in 2017, over 580 adults registered for different programs within the Master Gardener educational program. We had about 200 or so participants in the Seeds of Spring gardening seminar, which the Master Gardeners put on in the spring of every year at Rogue Community College. A one-day soil symposium was also held with 56 people, and then there was a two-day citizen science training workshop with the Oregon Bee Atlas Project that had 42 participants. And something interesting that's developed over the past year, a little over a year, is that we now have an insect working group within the Master Gardener volunteers who have received specialized training in entomology, and they're doing some citizen science in the community in partnership with faculty on campus looking at native pollinators, as well as providing support to the plant clinic around insect and pest questions that come into the plant clinic. So they're a really incredible resource in terms of being able to answer.
You guys pull in the Southern Oregon Bee Girl Association. I'm a big supporter of her whole mission. And the board, not you guys, I think the previous board, we donated a Jeep to her deal. And she just sent me this nicest thank you note the other day. She's like, I'm always running around at 110 miles. Like, you're like a little bee. And she was like, this Jeep helped out so much. It was surplus from us. It was leaking and had some issues. She got it all done up for free and stuff. And just anything we can do she's great. She's a great resource.
Great. Good to know.
She's buzzing all over the nation. She flies back to the East Coast.
Yeah, so having just started in April, I'm still getting to know all of the
Sarah
kind of community partners.
Right there.
Yeah.
Model puts you in contact.
Yeah. Our volunteers also write articles for the paper, and we have a weekly radio show segment.
So because of this picture, so if folks have questions about tree issues and stuff like that, would you guys be a resource for them? Or do they just have to hire an arborist?
Well, so when it comes to kind of technical support and information about how to manage trees on their property or in their landscape, it really depends on kind of the scale. So the Master Gardeners can assist with home of landscape type tree questions, and then we have a forestry agent who can help with
larger
scale. Yeah, Max Bennett, who's I think Sue's going to present some information from Max.
Great.
So, yeah. We also have a K-12 program, so we have volunteers that work with various school gardens across the county, assisting with planning and education as well as maintenance with the school gardens and the Junior Master Gardener program, which I'm going to after this meeting, and Sue mentioned, is a partnership with 4-H and the Master Gardeners at Highland Elementary. So they are able to use the school garden that's been established there for some of their hands-on education. We also have a Young Master Gardener program where we have a group of volunteers who organize, it's a 9-month program that runs from September to May, and they do one session a month at the library for two different age groups. So they do a toddler group, and then they do a 6 and above group, and it's a really interactive, participatory learning for youth about garden activities in the library. So it's a really great partnership with the library, and I was able to attend one of the toddler sessions a couple weeks ago, and there was singing and kind of get up and move around activities, and apparently they bring tarps in and soil a lot of weeks and get their hands dirty in the soil. From September 2017 to May 2018, there were 632 participants in that program, and that includes the youth as well as their parents who attend. the Josephine County Master Gardener Association puts on a spring garden fair every year. And in 2017, my understanding is it was kind of a cold and rainy weekend, but they were still able to raise over $8,000. And that money directly supports the program activities that the Master Gardeners put on in the community and is the largest fundraising event for the association. It's also an educational event, so the trainees in the Master Gardener class are involved in growing all of the plants, and they receive hands-on education through that. And then we have a plant clinic during the Spring Garden Fair and other hands-on education, answering questions from folks about what they should do with the plants when they get them home. Another program that was started in 2015 is the Seed to Supper program, and this is a partnership with the Josephine County Food Bank. This is a statewide program that teaches low-income participants about how to grow and eat healthy food, and our Master Gardeners teach this series in 2017. The class was just held in Grants Pass, and there were 21 participants who were taught how to garden on a budget, and it's a 6-week program.
Wow. Hmm.
So last year was the beginning of the demonstration gardens, with support from the county, and the association began work on the first phase of the demonstration gardens, which are in front of the auditorium building at the extension office, and John was integral in getting this accomplished. So some of the asphalt was removed in front of the building on both sides, and they have planned out two kind of separate gardens. So one side is for food production and demonstrates different container gardening and accessible gardens. And then the right side is focused on xeriscaping, so low water gardening, as well as native and pollinator plants. And right now we're working on putting together the signage for these gardens so that the educational component will be there. We had a volunteer who's actually part of the Master Food Preserver program volunteered her time to lead the painting of these incredible murals on both sides of the building. So definitely stop by the office sometime and look at them. They're finished now, and they're really a great addition to the site.
I missed by there Monday, yesterday. I don't know. Days are so long. I think it was this week.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. We also have some other existing demonstration gardens at the site that people might not be aware of, so we're going to be working on signage for those as well. So we have fruit trees planted and grapes. And the greenhouses are for the Master Gardeners, where they do their plant production. And then there is an existing garden that was renovated and is now demonstrating small space fruit production. So there's berries and lots of strawberries right now, actually. So in 2017, there were 115 Master Gardener volunteers, and 98 of those went through the recertification process, which is 10 hours of continuing education and 20 hours of volunteer service. We had 40 Master Gardener trainees go through the program, and 32 of them completed their 70 hours of volunteer service and graduated. In all, the volunteers contributed over 14,000 hours, and that's the value. We value their time at, I think it's around $24 an hour, $23 an hour. And we had 7,300 public contacts. A lot of youth received programming through the school garden program, as well as adults. And so just a reminder that, you know, the Master Gardeners offer reliable, relevant, and reachable gardening education and information. So the information that the volunteers are trained to provide is all science-based, and it's relevant to an individual's gardening situation when they come in, or the community's needs. And then we're reachable through a variety of different ways, whether it's over the phone, email, questions. We even have an online tool called Ask an Expert where people can submit questions online and have them answered. So,
thanks,
all right. Pass it on.
Awesome.
Cheryl, actually, I guess I should ask if you have any questions.
I have a question. Are there any community gardens, if you're training low-income people to grow food, do we have community spaces where people can rent a or get a plot for the season and actually do that?
So my understanding is that there are not very many community gardens in Josephine County. There's space at the food bank. There's a senior garden space. I believe there's one at a, and Peter, you might be able to help me out with this. But,
there's some space, or was some space at Options Gardens that was available if someone wanted to take advantage of that. And again, at Rapid Creek Farms, as you alluded, there's space there. They offered us space to, if anyone was interested. The problem is one of transportation for most of the people that are in this Seat to Supper program are usually in that indigent level, and they're not, the bus line doesn't run out there to make it really convenient for them.
But, and the low-income housing areas don't have them, but that would be really interesting.
Yeah.
The idea of having a community garden with a master gardener available to help would seems like a really
in Arlington, where in Alexandria, they're everywhere. You know, they're just they're almost part of the city's landscaping.
Yeah. And there is one in Cave Junction. There is one back behind. Is it behind the county building? No, it's behind the women's crisis support.
Oh yeah, yeah, they've got one.
What about Fayetteville Elementary?
Oh my goodness!
I think the Highland School garden turns into a
community
garden.
The one at Highland Elementary School was started by Diane Smith and her husband Mike, and they have developed that into a community garden. We were just there last weekend doing a major cleanup. There was a church group there that helped.
Serve Grants Pass.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And, but again, they're all raised beds. They're planted with different vegetables. And like right now, the elementary kids that were involved with the Junior Master Gardener program have two raised beds. But we will donate those. Their class session ends in another week. And so then that will become just community garden. Currently, they have tomatoes, peppers, lettuce, I'm trying to think of what else, and some different herbs or whatever planted in those two. In the other beds, there's corn in one, there's peas.
What I've heard is really the challenge is like the schools are going to be out here in a couple of weeks and stuff hasn't ripened yet, and then there's really tough times of getting the kids to come back to school.
That's why it becomes a community garden.
Yeah,
it's
that,
more
that
parental, and right, it goes into community,
it
transitions to community, you know, away from the kids, yeah. Again, right now, the program is going on right now at the school, and they'll be harvesting some of the lettuces that they planted, and they're also doing an herbs comparison, recognition of what the herbs are, how they can be used, culinary versus sachets or whatever you might want to do with them, whatever. But
is there an opportunity with, say, the youth correctional facility out there and the new school that they've got out there, kind of have a captive audience there? But no, there's always everybody else says, well, you know, why doesn't the jail grow some of their own food?
Uh-huh.
Why not? Why? And I see more of the value in it that a young person, you know, maybe that may be his connection to say, I'm a little bit, there's something bigger than myself if I grow something out of the ground.
So our jail actually did have a growing program.
I was just going to say they did. They did have it in the past.
And I don't know where that went, but they actually
down.
Got it.
He didn't have the staff to man.
The jail was pretty much,
let alone
it was a catch and release program.
It takes somebody to be out in the yard. So.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm thinking that the youth facility is not catch and release. It's not a big turnover on there.
Right.
Those people stay there for a given amount of time. They'll be there for 8 months.
We have the same thing at the county, the juvenile shelter and detention facility. You were saying Turning Point. That would be a phenomenal place to start.
Well, and something. It'd be great to see about having the Turning Point shelter folks maybe be taking part in 4-H in some fashion.
Yeah.
And
part of drug court?
No. These are the kids that are there under protective. They're not the detention side that have committed. They're there because they don't have a safe home to go home to.
Right.
And there's not foster placement, so it's kind of a last resort. And so that might be an opportunity, and I know Jim Goodwin would be willing to, and some staff would be supportive of that. But I agree, Oregon Youth Authority over there, and we can get you contacts there as well, because they are there for a little longer time. It gives them the programs with the dogs in the prisons are very successful, and there's a lot of pride of having earned the right to work a dog and to take care of a dog, and something like a garden given responsibility and the follow-up and just seeing an outcome of it could potentially be something that could plant seeds in a youth to last a while.
Yeah, so my two big projects for the summer are to do a home and community horticulture needs assessment, so identifying kind of what's happening in the community and what the gaps are, and then I'm working with Maud, who's our small farms person, to do one for agriculture in Josephine County as well. So I think, you know, this input is great and will certainly be brought into the needs assessment. So,
you know, I think the more we go with processed everything, that people forget where food comes from. And there's a time that people, just yesterday I had a couple that was from Washington State saying, we want to come down, get 2 to 5 acres and just live off the land and with animals and, you know, vegetables and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, great. You know, it's like, so you guys are all talking. It's like, I know a resource for you to show you how to do it, city dwellers.
The gardens within a community have the ability to build community. And I think that's something that should be doable in our county, but I'm not sure is actually happening.
You see it in more urban areas that you have more density as population, where they can walk to a community garden and take care in that function, where we are kind of spread out a little bit more. You don't necessarily see the coming together. And the garden that was at Fruitdale Elementary School, it did well for a while, but then it seemed like, I don't know who was taking over. And
has Debbie been out there?
The whole K through 12 program, I think, is down to only 4 schools right now. Highland, Madrona, I don't even, but anyway, it really has taken a big downward. And I'm sure Sarah is, you know, going to try and revise that whole thing with the master gardeners.
Well, we'll see what that
but you need cooperation with either the school district, I mean the county school district, or the Grants Pass City School District. You need cooperation from the top to make those things happen. You can't just go in there as master gardeners and get those up and running.
I think there's that ability, and it's another area that we can try to intermediate and can make connections and help put pressure on. I mean, because right now we're really trying to say, we have all these silos of effect, and but we are all affected by everybody else's decisions. So how do we be community across it all? And one of the programs Commissioner DeYoung and I learned about in County College last year at OSU Extension was the food-to-table program they have in the schools. Well, here they say there's no farms creating enough that to provide for our schools. Well, what if each school was producing stuff and they said, hey, right, you grew this, and now we're eating it, you know, that kind of thing. So even more involvement if we can expand it to that level.
Right. Some of that did occur, but again, as someone also mentioned, school is out here in another couple of weeks, and most of that produce
I picked my first strawberry this morning.
Well, again, there are spring crops that are available. Again, spinach, peas. Those things could be cultivated in the springtime that could be harvested prior to the, you know, the let go of the kids out of school. But, you know, many of the other things would have to become transition into community gardens. And the other problem is many of the schools don't really like the idea of strangers coming on board, too. I mean, it's so with everything that's happening with, you know, in this nation with schools, it's a concern. So,
well, food is a good segue to Cheryl.
Cheryl.
And you know, we've done work in our nutrition ed program with garden-based nutrition education, and you know, have worked in various school gardens. So you know, there's all this overlap with what we do. And Sarah and I have talked about some of the issues with school gardens, and one of the keys there is, who's responsible for maintaining? And that's because nobody wants to take the full responsibility, and the school district has said, you know, we can't have the custodians, we don't have the staffing, so that kind of becomes an issue. So we got to figure out, you know, how we share that, how we involve parents, and how we involve PTA or PTO and get all that
happening.
There are stipends for...
There have been.
I
don't know that they're there right now.
Yeah, for coordinators.
There were some stipends through Rogue Valley Farm to School. You know what? I only brought three of these little update packets.
Actually, I brought four.
We can share. And,
yeah. And maybe I... Anyway, these are a variety of kind of fact sheets that have come from our statewide program. So most of you know me. I'm Cheryl Kirk. I'm a registered dietitian, and I've been with Extension since 2012. I've been in Grants Pass since 1997 and worked with the hospital and Broad Community College. This is just a slide of the state of Oregon and talks a little bit about our nutrition education programs that we do, primarily what is called SNAP Ed. And that is, we receive a large grant from USDA that goes through Oregon Department of Health and Human Services to OSU to do SNAP education throughout all 36 counties in Oregon. So in order to do our work, we work with key partners like schools, school food service, Head Start, federally qualified health centers, food pantries, just about anybody that we can find that wants to work with us and has population that is qualifies for SNAP Ed. In Grants Pass, what we usually use as the measuring stick for that is is there at least 50% of the students that qualify for free and reduced lunch? And in Grants Pass and Josephine County, that's all of our elementary schools and basically our high schools and middle schools as well. So we can work basically with any population in our county. So we are charged with teaching nutrition education classes using evidence-based and research-based curricula, and then also working with policy systems and environmental change. Because what we know is education does only so much, but our environment has a huge impact on people's lives. So one of the resources that we use a lot is the Food Hero campaign, and this is a social media campaign. One of the interesting things about this is it was piloted starting in about 2012, and Josephine County was one of the pilot counties for this program. And I've included a lot of resources here, but it has grown. This is a website that's maintained on campus. We use the materials as the basis for our programming with children, adults, seniors. They're really designed for parents of young children, but we end up being able to use these across the board. The website has this newsletter like you see here. It's also full of recipes. We have toolkits for a lot of the program things that we do. And last year, there's a fact sheet here on campaign highlights, but one of the things to point out is that there's about 125,000 users per month to the Food Hero website. So we use it in our programming, but one of the other things that we do is we train other people how to use these resources. So we do a lot of train-the-trainer programs with folks like Head Start. We are using these in food pantries for food demos. So we're spreading that use of this resource beyond the programs that we do. And there's a little picture. I hate these slides that do that. okay, so this is just a piece of a slide of the social ecological model, but in order to focus on obesity prevention, we look at using that framework where we're trying to impact policies, systems, and the built environment. And here's our little 2017. I think this is the only program-related number. In 2017, we had over 11,000 educational contacts in Josephine County with youth and 1,900 with adult audiences. And that's both classes and events. These are some of the partners that we work with in Josephine County. And Head Start and Early Head Start, we've really done a lot of systems types work with them. Their home base is in Central Point. So we can disseminate materials and program and information through that central office that gets out to all the corners, you know, whether they're in Ashland or Cave Junction or Shady Cove, wherever those happen to be. Boys and Girls Club, Siskiyou Community Health Center has an outreach program for parents of young children up to age 5. and they do home visits, and they have used the Food Hero resources to frame nutrition education when they do home visits. I'll talk a lot more about some of these other sites in other slides, so I'm going to pass through. In the last year, Blue Zones Project has been another partnership and group that we're working with as well. This shows some of the types of events and family nights that we might go to in schools, which we're kind of hitting that season again. It's usually fall at the beginning of school, and at the end of school, we have this cool blender bike, which we're going to have Sue double check and see if our blender's working well, because sometimes it gets a little glitchy. But we have a bike that the blender attaches on. It's a Vitamix, and we can make smoothies and have kids pedal it to make the blender move.
Pedaling the bike.
so we can tie in our physical activity and nutrition at once.
Maybe, you never know.
And, you know, the Kids Dash, which is coming up at the high school in June, we go to that. You know, Dr. Dick Cohen is a big proponent of that and keeping kids physically active, and we see a lot of kids there. Sue helped us out greatly last year because two of us had high school graduating seniors, so we couldn't really be there that weekend. Another strategy that we have come up with in Southern Oregon and that has spread to the SNAP Ed program across the state is going in and training teachers and working with school staff to give them some ideas on how to do healthy class parties. Because of the health department regulations, they need to bring, or the teachers believe they need to bring, have prepackaged food. So that usually reverts to pizza, ice cream, you know, sodas, cookies, cupcakes. And at the same time, with the Healthy Hunger-Free Child Act, schools are charged with having wellness policies that say that they aren't going to be rewarding kids with what we would consider junk food. So we have a toolkit that we've used to train teachers, and we've trained 49 elementary teachers in Josephine County to use this toolkit and some recipes for healthy celebrations or some ideas for classroom rewards and celebration parties that don't involve food. And right now, next week, we're going to send out an evaluation and see how well they're doing with using that toolkit, if we have to do some more retraining. Head Start. One of the key things that we do with Head Start is they have a we have a Food Hero tasting passport, and the Head Start cooks throughout the 23 centers in the area are charged with doing some nutrition education with kids. And they really didn't know what to do. So what we've come up with is they use the Food Hero Monthly, and they focus on a key fruit or vegetable that month, and they do tastings with the kids. And then they stamp the passport and then send the Food Hero Monthly newsletter home with the child. So it's turned out to be something that the Head Start cooks have been able to grasp onto and do. It's been a successful way for us to reach all of those Head Start centers, because I have 5 part-time staff in the 2 counties, both Jackson and Josephine, so we can't get out to 23 centers throughout the year on a monthly basis. And then our partnership with Josephine County Food Bank and Raptor Creek Farm is one of those that has really grown. Sam is right here in the room. We did a lot of work with Sam as the food bank was moving to a new location, and then continued to do that work. Planting seeds for the future, summer 2017, we had 94 youth from Boys and Girls Club and YMCA who were bused out to the Raptor Creek Farm, and they spend one morning a week doing activities in the garden, and then we do a food activity, and they get back on the bus and they head back to the Boys and Girls Club or our YMCA. Planning to continue that again this year, and I think we're into year 4 is what this year will be.
4 or 5, yeah.
Yeah. So, and the Raptor Creek Farm has had a education coordinator at the farm that's a seasonal position that has been sponsored by a generous sponsor in the community. I don't know if I should say.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
By All Care, basically. So there is a partner that we work directly with, as well as the farm manager. And then the other project that we initiated in 2017 was working with the food pantry to train some volunteers to go out and do food hero food demos each month in three of the busiest pantries in the area. And what this has allowed us to do is have that happen consistently every month. And they go out the last week of the month, which is typically the time when the food pantries are the busiest because people have run out of their SNAP dollars at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. And in last year in Josephine County, in 5 months working with that program, they increased our reach through our SNAP Ed program by 3,900 contacts they made by going to the pantries and logged about 85 volunteer hours. So that's been a huge benefit to us and something we're working on continuing. And I think the food bank has received a little bit of a grant so that they can extend that to more than those three pantries. We had a training yesterday, and I thought about it last night. Somebody from the Illinois Valley was supposed to come, and they didn't come, so I'm going to have to find out if we can get them trained. We've also, some of the volunteers have been our Master Food Preserver volunteers. So it's been a nice way to overlay both our SNAP Ed and Master Food Preserver program working together.
Can you answer me a question?
Yeah.
The 555,000 pounds of food, was that all grown at?
No.
Okay.
Nope. In fact, one of, you know, Raptor Creek, Sam can help me with this, but the statistic I heard yesterday is Raptor Creek grows maybe 2% of the produce and fruits and vegetables that are given out at the food bank.
Where does the rest of it come from?
It's about 2% of the overall food, and that's
the overall
long answer.
Okay.
But the food comes from a lot of different places. There's a partnership with Oregon Food Bank. There's exchanges with other food banks. So if we have a really good cucumber year, then we'll exchange cucumbers with another food bank for watermelons, say out of Hermiston with Pendleton Food Bank.
But, I mean, Oregon's got a fairly short growing season. What do you do in February?
So if you go out to, it would be really great to do a tour of Raptor Creek Farm, yeah, because they have added a couple hoop houses. So last year when we were starting this program where the kids were going to go out, the education coordinator was saying, yeah, we're going to have zucchini in June. And I'm thinking, you know, you're from Texas. Maybe you have zucchini in June in Texas. But no, sure enough, they had zucchini in June because they had them in that hoop house. So, you know, they've extended their growing season and I think are growing three seasons per year and taking a little bit of time off in the late fall and early winter.
Well, and programs like this don't bring in the majority of the food that food banks distribute, but this is a shift towards taking some ownership over the food supply and also increasing the amount of fresh produce that you're able to distribute, and then also doing some education with community members, how to grow the food, where the food comes from, talking about having kids have a good understanding of what their food system looks like. There's 94 kids from the Boys and Girls Club and YMCA that are out there learning this and then learning how to take those skills home. They're also contributing to the success of the program. They're harvesting fruits and vegetables. And then statistically, knowing that our elementary schools are qualifying for free and reduced meals universally, the majority of these kids are also going to qualify for either SNAP or SNAP Ed, SNAP, OHP, and a variety of other services because of the demographics of our county. A lot of these kids are growing and picking the food that their parents are taking home in food boxes later that week. So there's a lot of connections that are happening out there that we didn't actually anticipate when we started the program.
Yeah, it's been really great. And same thing with the demos in the pantries. So, you know, the word is they'd have fresh produce in the pantries for clients to take, but they really didn't know what to do with it. So if somebody's there demoing what to do with kale or how to cut a winter squash or whatever it happens to be, then the folks who visit the pantry are more likely to take that produce home and actually cook it. So, you know, we don't just want to push produce through the food bank. We actually want people to eat it and use it.
Well, and I used to be on the board at the Rock, and we would find that with many, they would toss the things they did, you know, they switched to a function of kind of a grocery store where you only take what you want, so there's less waste. But if you don't have the ability to cook it, if you don't have the ability to, how are you going to eat some of those things? And so, yeah. It's,
you don't have a recipe.
Yeah. Well, some of the the success in the schools in Eastern Oregon was that they were making the food taste good in a way that the kids weren't realizing they were eating the vegetables or something like that. And but if you're living at a camp, how do you know how to do that?
This is just a quick slide of doing a food tasting at a school. So sometimes we do fresh fruits and vegetables. Sometimes they're prepared in a recipe. And then the kids have a chance to vote on whether they like something, sort of like it, or they don't like it yet. And then we've tagged some of our recipes as kid-approved if there's 70% approval on those. Whoops. Sorry. Jumped to Karen's. And then finally, these are some of the Josephine County Coalition groups that I work with in my extension work. I've been on the Blue Zones and the Pioneering Healthy Community Steering Committee, which brought Blue Zones here. I think we're just into year two. It's kind of what's funny. We found out year two starts like May 1st or something. There's not really a fiscal year associated with it. There's a blueprint that's been established and some metrics and some things that people are looking at trying to do, and we'll see how that plays out in our community, as well as Douglas County, Klamath Falls, and the Dalles. So those are the other communities that are doing Blue Zones.
Well, thank you for your service on the Board of Health.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, it's been an evolving situation. Okay, I think Karen's up, unless there's any other questions.
No.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Hello, this is my second year here. I feel slightly more prepared than I was last time. Only slightly. So I, like Cheryl, I'm in the Family and Community Health Division. When I try to explain what I do to my mom, I should tell her that I do public health and community development. So that's, between that and being a professional doc connector, I think that covers everything. So the program areas that I oversee are the Master Food Preserver Program, the Strong Women Program, and additional FCH efforts. So the Master Food Preserver Program, we had 22 volunteers recertify last year. They are both in Grants Pass and out in the Illinois Valley. They provided over 972 hours of service. Compared to the state, it was a total of, I'm sorry, I'm blind at this point. I don't think they have the hour count up there. So it's down a little bit from last year because we've been shifting and adjusting, but it's still pretty high. We had 38 pressure gauges tested, and pressure gauge testing is really important because for one case of botulism, it can cost about $1 million.
Oh.
So we consider that a pretty valuable service that we provide to the community. We connected with residents about 1,900 times. We did outreach events, community classes, both in Grants Pass and Kirby. Very active at the Josephine County Fair, and then the food pantries that Cheryl spoke to earlier. We did actually have a awardee this year. Debbie Ashton received the OSUEA Cooperator Grant Award for her service to the community and to OSU. She provided over 1,500 hours of service in 2017 in her duties as a Master Food Preserver and Master Gardener. So she's a huge asset to the community, and we're very happy to have her continued commitments. We are also working on the development of a hybrid format for the Master Food Preserver program because we understand that it's a little challenging for people to come into Grants Pass for 8 weeks over an extended period of time, commit an entire day, typically a weekday, to become a certified Master Food Preserver. And so I am leading a state group to look at the feasibility of developing a hybrid format to become a certified Master Food Preserver so we can bring this program further into some of our more rural communities that have access issues.
I would think the town of Williams would be interested in some of this. I mean, you got amazing organic farmers out there, and some actually are producing various products of distribution and such. But
Yeah, and so I think Maude will probably talk to it a bit, but there is some work being done around Oregon's farm direct marketing law and Oregon's home baking bill, because that's more of that sort of producer to market for value-added components. So there is a lot of education happening there, and we have had some farmers that go through the Master Food Preserver program. We had Susie Fry came through, and Kia. Kia is a Master Food Preserver.
With or without the mullet?
I think it's gone now.
Yeah. But she makes a mean mustard.
She does.
Yes, she does. And she actually got hopped up on mustards because of Ellen Scannell, who's another Master Food Preserver in Jackson County. She's been with the program for 20-plus years.
Wow.
So we sort of light a fire under each other and grow. Strong Women, so it's an evidence-based strength training program, fall prevention program for postmenopausal women. We have two women that run classes here in Josephine County on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, back-to-back classes, and it's been a really strong cohort of women. It's been in place for over 10 years now. There is some growing interest in sort of what other programs are available for this group. We know that Jackson and Josephine both have pretty large older populations when you look at the percentage of population overall. And so with the aging population, we want to make sure that there's lots of opportunities for physical activity. And so we're looking at some additional programs to potentially bring it in, but the Strong Women one's been very, very well received. So I am also on the steering committee for the Regional Community Health Assessment. We just actually completed a week of community engagement. We had 10 focus groups and 2 community forums in Jackson and Josephine counties. I coordinated the one out in the Illinois Valley. We had it at the Illinois Valley Family Coalition. It's really interesting when you get this many organizations in one room and sort of the competing priorities and sort of what people want to see happen. Mm-hmm. I think we're very fortunate in this valley because we've seen a lot of work being done around ACEs and trauma-informed care. There's a lot of understanding of sort of poverty as a root issue for some of the other things we're seeing, like chemical dependency and housing insecurity and that sort of stuff. So I think that there's some great opportunities there, and everyone seems to be really enthusiastic about the work. We are going to be having a local public health system assessment the week of July 12th. I know that some of you will be receiving invites to come to that to provide your expertise and your perspective on how the county is doing around public health and as a broader system outside of just the health department, how we're working across different divisions. This is part of the Mobilizing for Action through Planning and Partnership framework, and so it is a 2-year-long process. So the community health assessment is just one phase. We will be moving into the second phase in 2019, and that's the improvement planning phase where the partners sort of come together, look at sort of the key issues that the community has identified, and figure out how to use resources in a way that's not duplicative and really starts to align priorities to move the needle in a big way that we haven't necessarily done before. I am also on a number of groups and boards, the Southern Oregon Healthy Data and Southern Oregon Health Equity Coalition's Data and Sustainability Work Group. So they're the Regional Health Equity Coalition for Jackson and Josephine County. I am a board member for the Oregon Public Health Association and Upstream Public Health. And then I have also joined the Barriers Healthy Eating Work Group for the Rogue Valley Food System Network. And just started attending the Caring Community out at Evergreen Elementary. And then the Oregon Community Food System Network around VeggieRx. So we are continuing to sort of flesh out how it will look when we move into Josephine County with the VeggieRx program. And so there's a lot of kinks. Like, there's a lot of lessons that we learned in Jackson County. We're now going into, I think, our 4th year of this program. And so we're sort of looking at more of a systems approach for the rollout in Josephine. And I just today learned that I'm getting my first intern, so I'm really excited about making it 80 hours a week instead of 40 hours a week that I have. So I think that's everything you need to know about me. Do you have any questions?
Cool.
Okay. Hi. I also brought you some brochures with classes.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for your time and attention. You know, I'm towards the end, so I've got to do a little song and dance or something to pay attention. So I'm going to first off, I'll pass out these. This is hot off the press. Have you seen this?
Oh, I don't know.
This is our Rogue Flavor Guide. Have you all seen this before?
No.
I think it's the sixth edition. So it used to be put out by Thrive, a local nonprofit, and we just merged with the Rogue Valley Food System Network, of which OSU Small Farms has a council seat. So it's basically a directory of all kinds of local farms and resources for farmers. So really excited. Literally came out yesterday. So I'm Maude Powell. I've met most of you before, and I'm with the Small Farms Program. And I usually start off by just talking a little bit about what a small farms is defined as, because it's a little bit nebulous. A lot of times you think about it as acreage or gross income, or there was a while when my son was 8 and he would call himself a small farmer, and so that's about the baby size as
now
well.
He's grown up, yeah.
But so the USDA defines it as any agricultural operation that's grossing between $1 and $250,000. So it's a pretty wide range there. In our program, we use a little bit more of, I think, a useful definition, which is thinking about it in terms of niche crops, specialty crops, value added, which was mentioned, and then thinking about markets. So it's primarily direct markets, whether it's through farm stands or farmers markets or selling to restaurants or in some cases institutions or to stores. And just to mention as well, in terms of Josephine County, we're still using the 2012 Ag Census data. So the USDA does a census every 5 years, and so they've done the 2017, but it usually takes quite a while to get the results. But in the 2012, there were 617 farms in Josephine County, which was actually down from the 2007. It was 675. And the average farm size in Joe County was 46 acres. With an average market goods sold of about $30,000. So really all of those are falling within that small farms category. And the top three commodities were milk from cows, fruits, nut trees, and berries, and then finally cattle and cows. So I just wanted to kind of give you like an overall landscape of who some of our clientele are and kind of what the overall landscape is. So a little bit about our program. I'm at a half-time position. My husband and I have a small farm in the Applegate Valley, and we also run a market cooperative for 7 farms. So I'm at half-time, but we have been able to, through grant funds and program revenues, we've been able to leverage quite a few other part-time staff people, if you can see up there. They're all on soft money, so it's kind of a continual process of chasing grants and trying to raise money for our classes so we can have a larger program. But I'm very, very excited that Sarah Runkel is now with us with some FTE dedicated to small farms. And additionally, we have a new full-time staff person. He's based in Jackson County, but he covers both counties. His name is Gordon Jones, and he's been on since June. And his background is in forage and grasslands and management of pastures and forage. So it's a really nice complement to mine and Sarah's more kind of horticulture background.
Didn't we used to have a regional person who did?
Yeah, we still have Shelby Philly. Yeah, she covers, I believe, 6 counties, mm-hmm. and she's based in Roseburg. So she does a little bit of programming down here, but it's obviously a pretty, she's got a pretty wide range.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Gordon ran an 8-week pasture management class this year in Jackson County. He's about to do some soil health workshops as well. So he'll probably be here next year, and he's great. I'm really excited to have him on. So we continue just to have this demand for beginning farmer education. So we still get calls regularly into our office, people who just bought acreage and want to make some money off of it, or you know, young people that are really seeing farming as a vocation and want to get into it to actually make money and have a viable business. So we've developed this robust beginning farmer training program. You can see we've got everything from a one-evening class to a three-evening class. Growing Farms has been kind of our flagship program. And then we now offer Growing Agripreneurs, which is a season-long program. It's actually hands-on with weekly field hours, farm tours, and classes. And that's held down at SORAC in Jackson County. And I just, again, this is like a program I'm continually trying to fund on soft money, so I just submitted a grant to have that funded with a partnership with the Josephine County Veteran Service Office next year, so we'd actually have a cohort of veteran farmers, because we do get quite a few calls in from veterans that are interested in farming. So we're excited, and fingers crossed we'll get that grant. So I work with Angie Boudreau, who used to work with Jackson Soil and Water Conservation District, and she has been contracting with us to do 8 classes a year on livestock and forage, which is a really big demand for both counties. And just to mention, oh, I should go back. So you can see in when we ran the Growing Farms program in 2016, we held that in Josephine County, and all 8 farmers were from Josephine County. This year with the Growing Agripreneurs program, we have 3 out of 11 of the participants are from Josephine County. And last year we held Exploring the Small Farm's Dream, and about 7 out of 29 of those participants were from Josephine County. So, you know, I run programs that cover both counties in both locations. And it's a little hard with our registration to actually figure out how many, because we don't do like a we don't have them check a box on their county, so I'd have to analyze zip codes. But we think roughly about a quarter of our registrants are from Josephine County overall. So yeah, livestock and forage classes, these are some things that we've offered in the last year and upcoming. We've got a parasite management class happening next month, and then a 5-part meat school, so looking at butchering on the small scale, pasture management, nutrient management, looking at direct markets for meat production. And then this is a new program this year. It's also grant funded. There was a food economic assessment done by Vince Smith down at SOU in 2015. And his analysis showed that the one direct market that was really expanding was actually farm stands. So based on that and a demand from clientele, I got a grant to run 4 classes and a farm tour. And then I think part of that slide's missing, is we're actually going to have a publication as well that comes out of that. And then we've had funds to actually support farmers one-on-one. So right now we're working with Whistling Duck Farm to help them set up an EBT machine so they can accept SNAP. We're also consulting with Fort Vinoy to expand some aspects of their agritourism operation. And the farm tour will be out at Fort Vinoy and also the Rogue Creamery Farm. So doing some programming here in Josephine County for sure.
I just spoke on Monday night at the Farm Bureau meeting for a couple of hours, and that was one of things that Bob asked was, where do you see agriculture going in Josephine County in the future? And I said, it's really hard to tell. I mean, trying to get out in front of what those new markets are going to be, mm-hmm. the niche opportunities. And
definitely.
Ag tourism definitely was one of those things that came up, because I feel like the viticulture industry is kind of saturated and some other things. But
yeah, definitely. I mean, you do have to be careful, because you can only have 20, if you're on EFU land, you can only have 20% of your grows come from agritourism.
Yeah.
Because they really want to see that you're actually growing product and not just, you know, hosting weddings, which I think is important as well. So that's one thing to be aware of. But yeah. So we've had our League of Women Farmers. It's been in existence since 2007. And we're doing quarterly meetings. So we do farm tours, educational events, we do retreats. So of our 42 active members right now, 16 are from Josephine County, so good representation. We've done some impact reporting over the years on the league and found there's been a lot of business development, a lot of collaborations and partnerships between businesses that have come out of this, as well as mentor relationships and a stronger sense of identity for women farmers, which is a growing demographic. And that's just some of the programming we've been doing recently. And then I've also been continuing to work quite a bit on seed education. So Southern Oregon is this great region for growing seed, vegetable and flower seeds in particular. We formed the Southern Oregon Seed Growers Association in 2013 and continue to receive some funding to do farm tours and demonstrations on site.
Thank you.
So this year we have 4 farm tours coming up. 3 of them are in Josephine County. There are a lot of seed farmers in Joe County. And then just continuing to offer programming as needed. So every class that I offer, we have an evaluation form that asks what people are interested in learning about. And so I take careful note of that and see what people are interested in. So this is just some other things. I annually offer a pesticide recertification class. We do a Get Your Goat Day every year. That's really popular. And Cheryl, did you mention, Cheryl, that we did the Recipe to Market again this year? Which is, yeah, a 4-series class that Cheryl and I partner on that's looking at value-added products, both for farmers and gardeners and people that, you know, chefs, people that want to take to market a cool value-added product. We've gotten great evaluations on that program. And I think that's it. So I'm happy to take any questions. I probably talked really fast.
I wish I had more time in my day to do all these classes. And
yeah.
I, you know, one thing that comes to mind with looking through the guide and the other brochures is we have a rack out here that has empty slots. I mean,
great. I've got a whole box in my car. So
We know where to get them.
Yeah, we know.
It's really funny. I asked the lady, do you need anything? She's like, no, I'm just looking at everything you guys have available here. And we used to have a lot more out there.
Yeah.
But people do that all the time when they're waiting for stuff. So.
Yeah, I can leave I've got about a half box in my car, and I can bring more if you want.
Great.
We can start with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One question. I had
never
heard of your League of Women Farmers.
Yeah.
Where do people find out about that?
There's a little bit on our website, our whole website is getting renovated right now. But you could email me and we can get you on the mailing list.
I was just curious in general. I mean, how would women farmers know that it existed?
That's a good question. A lot of it's word of mouth at this point. And we do some advertising for it, mostly through our email list. We have a pretty comprehensive email list. And we do have a Facebook page as well, which I update with fun photos of all of our events.
The Gardeners has a booth at the Growers Market, but Does that promote everything or just
just the Master Gardeners? Or
it's just pretty much Master Gardeners.
Yeah. And you know, there was a time when the League of Women Farmers got so huge. There was something about, like, women and farmers that, like, the media was, like, doing stories on us. And we had one tour where, like, 70 women showed up. It was actually at Whistling Duck. This was back early on, maybe 2008. And what we found is a lot of the people that showed up were newbies, and they were asking basic gardening questions. And my real purpose is to support commercial women farmers.
Right.
And those women farmers were like, we don't want to come back if this is... I mean, they weren't trying to be, you know, obnoxious or anything, but they were just saying, like, this isn't for us.
That's,
you know, we need...
So,
and obviously we're not going to, you know, check people's tax returns at the door and make sure they're making a living farming if they come to the event. But we do really advertise it as for women farmers so that we can kind of keep the level of communication and the educational level fairly high so the women feel like they're getting something out of it. Because it's actually really hard to get farmers to show up to stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's all, like, weather dependent. Like, you have this great class planned, and then it's a sunny Saturday in May, and forget it, you know.
Work
and
outside, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it is tricky sometimes to get farmers to show up. I found it's way easier to get women to show up, especially if there's food involved. But women love... I hate to say it. I hate to be essentialized the genders, but there is something about women gathering and sharing information, and the social camaraderie, and then, you know, bringing their dishes, and it's been a lot of. I have to say, I don't know if work is supposed to be this fun, but the League of Women Farmers has been a really fun and rewarding part of my job. So. Yeah, and I really want to thank John too. As you probably know, we're losing John, and he's just, like, shown so much leadership, and you've been a great supervisor. So
thank you.
Very sad to leave you. Have you go. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay.
Good.
Okay, no, I'm really not Max Bennett. Poor Max gets stuck at the end of this program every year. And last year we were running so short of time and he just had to, like, run through it all. So he did type me up some notes because he couldn't even be here today. And so I'm going to kind of share his slides and his notes. He is our Extension Forestry and Natural Resources Agent. And Kara is Program Assistant who coordinates the Citizen Fire Academy and the My Southern Oregon Woodlands Program. Forestry and Natural... Whoops. Hello. Where'd it go? There we are. Forestry and Natural Resources Program provides objective, research-based information and educational opportunities for woodland owners, foresters, contractors, and other natural resource professionals and public audiences. The goal of the program is to improve the stewardship of forest resources for their many social, economic, and environmental benefits. Woodland owners are the biggest audience for this program. There are thousands of woodland owners in the Jackson and Josephine counties who collectively manage over 200,000 acres of forest land. Top objectives of many owners are protecting their homes and properties from wildfire and having a healthy forest, and many of our education programs focus on these two objectives. We also have many new property owners coming into the area, often without rural living experience and without knowledge of Southern Oregon's unique environment. The Citizen Fire Academy program provides fire adaptive communities by teaching property owners how to better prepare for wildfires. This includes things like fire-resistant landscaping and fuels reduction. In the past year, the CFA program has offered several trainings and workshops, reaching almost 100 participants. In addition, the CFA curriculum was published and has been protected both in and out of state, promoted. As a result of CFA, over 70 homeowners and landowners have completed wildfire preparation plans. Many have completed fuel reduction projects and have participated in other volunteer activities, such as organizing FireWise groups. As one CFA participant said, the program provides comprehensive, good practical advice that can be implemented on the ground. In addition to CFA, Extension has worked with the local Small Woodlands Association to sponsor other fire-related classes, such as those listed here. We published a guidebook for property owners on how to create and maintain defensible space. Ongoing maintenance is a big issue. The guide includes practical suggestions for how to get that done. The My Southern Oregon Woodlands program is a cooperative venture of OSU Extension, Oregon Department of Forestry, Oregon Forest Resources Institute, American Forest Foundation, Oregon Tree Farm Systems, and other local partners. The objective is to reach previously unengaged owners with resources to improve forest health and wildfire preparedness. Offers include publications, forester visits, community meetings, and cost-share programs to provide funding where these are available. MSOW, how would you pronounce that? MSOW, uses direct mail techniques, and we are starting up a new outreach project this fall using social media. To date, it has succeeded in engaging more than 300 owners representing over 16,000 acres of forest land. There have been more than 7 community meetings, 150 forester visit requests, 23 signups for cost share programs, 8 stewardship plans completed, and 2 new FireWise communities created. And these numbers will only increase as more forestry visits are completed. In 2017, 8 Josephine County neighborhoods and small communities were among the areas targeted by the program. Forest health is a perennial concern for landowners, and following the hot drought of 2013 through 2015, there have been elevated levels of tree mortality throughout the forests of Southern Oregon, especially for Douglas fir, but also including other conifer species. There are other threats as well. Invasive insects such as the emerald ash borer are devastating forests back east. They could be deadly here too if they become established. For this reason, we hosted an Oregon Forest Pest Detectors workshop to train local professionals in identification of exotic forest health issues. And I responded to more than 125 sick tree queries via phone, email, ask an expert, and where more extensive acreage or unusual problems were encountered via field visits to affected landowners. Fortunately, many of the approaches that lead to move fire-safe forests, such as thinning and fuel reductions, also contribute to improved forest health. We offered a number of classes throughout the year on various topics of interest to landowners and professionals, such as those listed here. Many of these were co-sponsored with the Jackson Josephine Small Woodlands Association. Some were evening programs and some field-based. The popular and award-winning land steward programs support landowners who want to learn how to balance sustainability with their rural lifestyles. Participants learn about a variety of natural resource topics and create a management plan for their property. They also get a chance to network with other landowners and with natural resource professionals who help teach the class. The Living on Your Land conference takes place in April and attracts over 200 participants. Many of these are new owners and or new to the area. This year, we will be offering a land stewards training here in Josephine County. The program will use a hybrid model, including a mix of classroom and field sessions and online lessons. We're working hard on the online curriculum right now with help from Oregon State University's professional and continuing education group. We're very excited about launching this program, which has been partially supported with grants. And that's actually what the garden looks like today.
Nice.
So, yeah. As the difference from outside the when you went, yeah, you saw it this week, but the mm-hmm. other picture that was up there was when it was beginning.
Yeah.
So they're making great strides.
Looks great.
And it's looking beautiful. So thank you for your time. Thank you for allowing us to present at least what we've done over the last year. And we'll have another year to come back and tell you how we've gone from there.
Great. Thank you, Sue.
Yes.
And thanks to all our faculty and staff for their great programming. I'm going to hand out the packets for the actual budget committee meeting. You can hand that down.
I think I already have one.
I've got one, yeah.
Yeah,
but you may want to at least take it so that you can have the bigger version of the spreadsheet because you won't be
able to. Oh, I got a bigger version of the spreadsheet.
Do you have one more?
Here.
Oh, wait. No, it's okay.
And if any of our team wants some, there's more packets.
Did we lose Sam?
We lost Sam. Unfortunately, it takes a little bit longer to get through all that material than what he could spur out of his busy schedule. But he had reviewed the budget document in advance and said he was in favor of it. So your first item would be to elect a chair of the budget committee for this particular meeting. It doesn't automatically fall to the chair of the commission. The budget committee is a separate entity. It could be. But you guys get to decide that. So that will be the first item on your agenda for the actual budget committee meeting.
I have no reason why Commissioner Young can do it just fine.
I was going to say I would love to have Commissioner Hare do it.
Only a handful of things left to do.
It's like tennis.
Anybody got a coin?
Tennis ball. Yeah.
Second it, Lily. Second it, Lily.
All in favor.
So I'll move that Commissioner Hare be chair.
All right. I second the motion.
There you go.
Moving along.
Well, you got to vote.
Yeah, somebody has to facilitate.
Oh, discussion?
I don't have any problem. It's only a couple of things. And I want to respect everybody's time, so we'll get through this really quickly. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Moving right along. Receive budget message. Okay. Then you just hand it right back to John.
Yeah, so would you like me to read it into the record? Do we need to read it in the record, or are you okay with just me giving a summary of it?
Summary would be okay with me if everybody...
I'm okay with a summary.
Yeah. So the budget message is part of the packet that is posted on the OSU Extension website. You folks have it. You could certainly have it posted on to the county website if desired. It's available for public. Has been out for well over a week, and the committee members have had it as well. The summary is that if you'll look at the actual budget pages, those are summarized on the forms LB20 and LB30. So that shows the general fund of the budget. LB30 is the requirements or the things that we need for expenditures. LB20 is the resources. And so for the proposed budget coming up, we anticipate that we're going to start with a beginning balance of $109,838 that we will have income in new taxes down at the beginning of the sheet of $335,355. And then in addition, we'll have about $10,000 in previously levied taxes and about $4,200 in interest. And so that becomes the kind of the total resources coming into the budget. We have than resources going out. It's very easy and concise in the actual budget that we turned into the Oregon Department of Revenue. That shows basically two line items of major expenditures. One is contracted services with Oregon State University, $359,000 and change, and then about $3,300 in administrative. So that's the cost for the annual review conducted by the auditor and then the filing fees and state filing fees associated with that. In addition, I budgeted again this year $20,000 should there be improvements to the parking lot. And our signed, the district signed agreement with the county says that if there's work done in the parking lot, that they'll pay up to a certain amount of that. And so we had discussed that. It's been in the budget for a couple of years. That project hasn't happened yet, but I continue to budget for it in case it does. So it's just kind of there should it be needed. If it's not needed, we won't fund it.
It's like 17 or 28% of the cost has been previously determined to be the 4-H Extension Service District's responsibility.
Set there. Yeah.
I just haven't wanted to move forward spending money on a parking lot where you won't be able to appreciate the duration. But word on that is that the board approved the idea of contracting a facilities master plan producer. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they're going to lead us, the community, through that discussion about what is the long-term
purpose. Yeah, and that will be very useful for extension, for
we
planning.
Need a plan.
Exactly, yeah. We continue to put money into our building fund. I think we can, so the kind of what we had been doing for most years was $10,000 a year. I've been putting a little more than that in because we had the resources available to make that happen. And so I'm proposing again $20,000, which has been what we've been doing more recently. We have an operating contingency of 5% of the total expenditures, so $36,000 and change, and that's going to leave us with an unappropriated ending balance for cash flow purposes of about $20,000. It's a little bit misleading because there's actually some money that gets held by OSU, another $135,000-ish there, which gives ample money to get us from the beginning of the budget year until November-ish when we start actually getting new revenues coming in. So there's plenty there for that. The agreement that OSU has with the district is that it bills twice a year for reimbursement of allowed expenses, and so we have enough to get us through that time period. The other piece here that you'll see, there's a form LB-11, and that documents what's going on in our building fund. That item there was revised in 2016. It's not just for building new buildings anymore. It's a place where we hold money could be for building new buildings, but it could also be used for making improvements to the existing facilities. And so that's been growing. I think that once we take in the $20,000 transfer, and I'm anticipating about $4,200 in interest in there, that will end the year with about $354,000 in that account. So that's a fairly good piece of funds that we've put away over the past, probably going now on 15 or 20 years, we've been stashing money away in there for that specific purpose. Each of these documents shows what we're proposing for this year. It shows for comparison the adopted budget that we're operating under now, and then it shows two preceding years of actual data, so meeting the actual statutory requirements for that. I'd like to take just a minute to have you just pull out the big sheet that's in there. So I can talk a little bit more about some of the details.
Can I talk about this one for just a second?
You can,
please. This is my last year, too.
Yeah,
both
yeah.
of ours.
Sure.
The idea behind this fund is to probably get to somewhere around 50% of the need requirement for a new facility. And so my thought is it improves the bonding capacity for the district to have something down, and then you're not trying to accomplish, if it's somewhere between $10,000 and $30,000 a year to pay off that bond for 20 years, you've got the total need probably covered there. So it's well poised to be able to do something like next couple of years very easily. And I just appreciate the leadership that you've shown on the foresight. A lot of places will start out and then they have to bond the whole doggone thing, and then they're drawing, $60,000 a year over 20 years to make it up. And this district won't have to do that. It'll be a really nice building you'll live in for 20 years. It won't be a big adjustment to the capital need to have a great facility going
through. Well, they've already demonstrated that they can put away $20,000 a year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Major.
Yep. We've tried to, whenever we had vacancies and we had salary savings, we moved that funds into the, the building
there
fund.
There were years where we did 30.
Just tried to be very consistent in making the contributions.
My expectation is that the county would partner in that effort, that there would be a co-located element to it. It wouldn't have to just be 4-H trying to buy the property and all of that stuff. That there could be an existing footprint that the county has that would make sense for the district, and that just this very similar to what it has right now, will provide you the property. You just have to build your building and that sort of thing. And I think
it can help save the district money.
Yeah.
And again, the partnership that we have, is, you know, it's a good thing there. I think that we all had hoped that the Food and Friends program, or Meals on Wheels, or whatever it's called, would be moved sooner than it's. I mean, that project seems, even the potential of partnering with some of your programs there, the Strong Women program would be a good program to use out of that facility, and recruiting people to participate potentially. But the fact that it's not moving anytime soon also hinders your ability to get everything done you need to.
Yeah, we've had very distinct space limitations, particularly office space, and we have a very full auditorium all the time for our programs, and so we would very much like to see them move into a new facility or remodel facility that is suitable to their needs, but it's also a valuable program, and so we'll continue to work together on that as long as we need to. Within the budget on this bigger sheet, you can see that I've lined out not only the budget that I've just described, which is the legal budget for the Oregon Department of Revenue purposes, but there's a column in there called OSU District Related. Those are the funds or the way that we kind of break down that big number that comes into the OSU contracted services number. So you can see that out of that, there's about $245,000 that's in personnel, and that includes our Master Gardener and Small Farms position. 0.65 FTE of that position is funded through district revenues. The remainder is funded through other generated revenues. We have a couple of secretarial positions and program assistant positions, and then the benefits, the other payroll expenses that go with that, the payroll taxes and things of that nature. And then there's just shy of $119,000 in other expenses that go to support the programs in general. So supplies and services, publications, computers, network connectivity, copy machines, utilities, travel budgets for these folks, both to do professional service and to do their outreach within the communities, things of that nature. Note that within that, I've budgeted $20,000 within that for potential building improvements. So if in this next fiscal year, Food and Friends were to vacate that building, there's some money there to make the repairs necessary, do the changes would be necessary to establish some office space over there in the place that they're currently using for office space, so that we could move some of our staff there. We really need to have more space within our existing office building in order to make that work. And so that just kind of gives you a description. There's not a lot of changes within the budget based from what we've been budgeting. It's been fairly, I wouldn't say static, but I track these numbers very carefully, and we're budgeting about as tight on these as what we can, so we're not seeing big changes within that. I try to be conservative in the budget requirements there. The income side, that within that column, shows the money coming in through reimbursements from the contract for services with the district, and then we have a little bit of money that comes back from Food and Friends as an offset from them for utilities on their part of the building. So that kind of summarizes the district part. Also reported, just for your knowledge, it's not technically part of the district, but OSU, as it's operating there, we have other ways that we generate revenues locally in order to bolster our program. So we have various fees that come in for various classes and things of that nature. I anticipate that there'll be a little over $22,000 that will come in through those types of class fees and things this coming year, and we'll spend pretty much that same amount back out on bolstering the programs that we do there, associated with our services here in the county. So that's a quick overview of the budget. No big changes in staffing, no big change in what we're requesting for the tax rate. We're going to be charging the full 4.59 cents per $1,000 of assessed value, as long as I've known. I don't think the district does ever anything different than that, and that will bring in about $335,000 in be what we work for the majority of this budget.
Where do you get that number? Is that from the assessor tax?
So the 4.5 cents? So
No. I know where that number comes from.
Oh, so how do we project what that is? So that's a good question. So the 4.59 cents is the approved rate associated with the district. That's the maximum tax rate on there. So the way that I estimate how much money that will result in is I go back to the last actual completed tax year, and I have money, I have records that come from the assessor's office that show me what that rate actually generated after compression, after refunds, and then from that, I can look at the trends in year-to-year increases. It's been about 3.5% for the last few years. That's kind of the rolling three-year average. And then I also note that from here in Josephine County, the tax collection rate in that first year runs right around 94%. So we don't get all of the money. And so that's the way I predict that, and I go back to that last year, and I can kind of predict forward based on
3.5% increase at 94%,
and then 94% of that. So that's where that number comes
from. Those numbers are right; they're right
there. Yeah. And
we had anomalies like 96% collection rates and stuff, and I think they're going to improve. The economy is doing well. Our foreclosure rate was one of the lowest we've had, and so there's real positive stuff out there for getting the assessed value is going up more than it's been since I've been in office. So, but your 4.57 cents is so small.
Yeah.
It the people talk about adding property value. It doesn't really do a darn thing. The 3% that's built in from Measure 5 and 50, that's one you can go to the bank on, the assessor.
Yep.
It just happens. Yep. The other stuff is really pretty small, especially because the city just imposed its urban renewal district, which takes all of that appreciation out of the running for all of that space that's delineated on that map. That's where the greatest development concentration happens. Actually, anything in color.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Anything in color.
But I look at those as long-term that results in an improvement in value.
And
my observation with urban renewal districts in various cities is that they rotate. Once they're there, they're always there. They just move around. And so that becomes just part of the
it's
mix.
It's a new thing for us. 18% was grabbed in this last one. They only have 25% at a given time. It was a big.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting thing. So that's great. I think your projection is right on. So, anything else, John?
I think that gives you an overview, and all of these, of course, will be filed through the clerk's office once they're complete.
Any questions? Looks real good.
Within your documents, then. We need to do a couple things, and I always provide you with some recommended motion.
I have to ask for the record of public comment.
So just before we get that, just so you've got the motions there if you want to review those, but that's how we'll summarize that. Yeah.
There isn't any public, so it really makes it pretty easy. But for the record, having have to ask it, anyone here has provided 3 minutes. Please just state your name and address for the record. Seeing nobody, we'll bring it back to the committee for any further discussion. Or item number 7 is a proposed motion to approve the budget as proposed with revisions if necessary and the approved tax rate. Those will be two separate motions if inclined. I think is that how you put it? Or
They're actually rolled into one.
Okay.
So it can be one motion. And there's an example of it there.
That's great.
Mr. Chair, I move that the proposed budget for the Josephine County 4-H Extension Service District be approved as presented for the 2018-19 fiscal year, and the district be approved to impose the taxes for the 2018-19 fiscal year at the rate of 4.59 cents per $1,000 assessed value for operating purposes.
Great.
A second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion of the committee? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. 5 with 1 absentee. He was here earlier and didn't formally delegate his endorsement, but I'm sure he did. So that's great. Unanimous of those who are here.
And so just kind of by way of upcoming items, the budget hearing, which is the next stage in the process, is scheduled for June 14th in this room at 2 p.m.
Great.
That should be brief, but once again, that's an opportunity for public comment.
Yeah.
And at that point, if it's if there's not any major concerns expressed, then I would suggest that we also can do the budget adoption that same day. That's typically what we've done. So I'll have those materials prepared. But if we get into that and you find that there's significant public comment or things that you have come to your concern that you want more discussion on, we don't have to adopt on that day. We just leave it to the discretion of the board. That is a meeting of the board serving as the governing body, but certainly budget committee members and members of the public are welcome at that meeting.
Something we haven't done, I don't think, in the past is delegating what the board of commissioners did with their budget committee, recommended delegating a different body to approve the minutes because of the delay in time and members changing. And I don't know if that's something you're inclined to do. It's always worked. We didn't have that on here. Or did you guys do that last time?
We didn't. And this group certainly could delegate. And that would be useful to delegate to the governing body.
The governing body.
Because we will meet again at the hearing to approve the minutes of this meeting. We've not formally done that in the past. We've just done it.
Right.
Bless you.
So that could be another motion from this group if this committee wanted to approve the governing body to approve the minutes of this particular meeting.
I thought that was an interesting thing we did at the budget committee. Mm-hmm. It solves the delay of a year of time between doing it. Robert's rules provide for it. It's just a standard thing if necessary. So I'd entertain a motion to that effect of delegating the governing body the ability to approve the minutes from this budget committee meeting. I'd entertain a motion to that effect if that was...
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on that? Does that sound okay?
Sounds good.
Just kind of move stuff along where they want. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 5-0.
Great. And then while I have your attention. We are, within our group, our team is proceeding under the assumption that we're going to be in the existing buildings at least for another few years.
Yeah.
And with that in mind, we have money that was budgeted in our current budget for improvements to the buildings. And we think we need to go ahead and use those to replace the roof on the office.
Okay.
The roof on the auditorium was replaced several years ago and was in good shape. The roof on the office, we've had some wind damage, we've got some missing shingles, we've had it looked at by a couple different roofing companies, and they're of the opinion that at least the upper part needs to be replaced. I'm of the opinion if we're going to do the upper part, we should go ahead and do those mansard roofs all the way around, make a match, and just get that done. And so,
then you know you have a standard from going forward.
We do, and so... We're looking at about $12,000 to do that. We've got that in the current budget, so there's no need for anything to be done. Just wanted to let you know that that's our plan.
Sounds good.
So we'll be proceeding with that.
Yeah, I think it's in the 5-year plan style to get something different in that. That would be what I imagine our facilities thing will say. It's going to take a little while. And
That's my
But the crazy thing is we'll talk about it, it'll come together, and it'll all happen like that. Mm-hmm. And you guys will be in a new building, and blah, blah, blah. The vision that I was thinking is it would go along with like what I want to do for parks and forestry, is to utilize some of our forest timberlands to mill up, you know, timber frame, post and beam style, nice northwestern style, so that we all have really beautiful buildings to be... have pride in. It's kind of like what they see down at the boardroom in that complex. Everything has really nice, you know, facade on and it captures. And reinvesting that asset back into the community, I think,
Pacific
might be something.
Northwest.
Yeah, could be really cool to brand it all in that fashion. So,
but and we have some trees.
If your roof has issues there right now,
that's a
every time I've seen a roof leak, it's right over the computer or the complex. Never leaks in a basket or out here in the floor. On a $10,000 piece of equipment.
Yeah.
And that's all I had for you today.
Anything else to the committee? Staff? Everybody okay? Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. And Mr. Punches, it has been a pleasure serving with you in the last 8 years.
Thank you, sir.
I just can't tell you how much I appreciate the diligence. We had some time when you weren't here, but for the majority of it, you've been behind the scenes or somewhere, making sure everything goes really well. And the staff that you lead is just impeccable. So, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
From the bottom of my heart, I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nothing else. We're adjourned. Thank you so
much. Thank you.
At 3:53.